The ACN podcast is made possible thanks to the generosity of our listeners and sponsors, including the Agile Alliance. As a nonprofit membership organization, the Agile Alliance is an excellent resource to help you along your Agile journey. To learn more about the Agile Alliance and our other sponsors, as well as how you can become a sponsor or supporter of our show, please visit acnpodcast.org for more information. And thank you for your support. Welcome to the Agile Coaching Network. This is episode 84. This is your first time listening to this podcast. It's not just the people that we've got on the panel, my co-hosts that are with me every month, which I really appreciate their contribution and efforts to this podcast. Shauna Diana Borg, Sheila Eckhart, and Sheila McGrath, and of course, all of you, join me monthly in order to go help to get the conversation started. If you go over to acnpodcast.org, you can go over there, you can join the forums, as well as if you really like this show, because we are just doing this we're paying out of pocket for this in order to go produce this, you're welcome to go support us by buying us a coffee. That helps to pay for our webinar system. It helps to go pay for any of the expenses that we have to go produce the show. And we appreciate all of the people who have already supported us, and we think that you guys are great. Last plug, if you've listened to the show for a long time and you go, oh my goodness, I really like Deanna and what she talks about, or Shauna and what she talks about, we are having a strategic agility lab, and they are two of the facilitators that are going to be joining me in Portland, Oregon, coming up on October 26th and 27th. We are going to be talking about strategic agility and how strategic agility fits into this bigger picture of what we do with Agile, and also in just in general, how do we make our companies succeed in the longer run? This is a set of advanced topics. There'll be some light presentation work by the people there, but the goal is to really make this a leadership retreat. Share a lot of thoughts, not just from the facilitators, but also the people who are joining us at this very relatively small event. We're only going to allow 100 people into this event. And the goal of that is to keep the conversations, keep it in a way where it's a little bit more intimate for us to be able to go share and talk about everything to this particular topic. And we would look forward to having you there. If you want to join and you say, Ray, I'd like to get a discount for that, you can actually reach out to either Diana or Shauna. They both have some discount codes, and you can actually request them from them, or you can also request it from me as well. To kick us off, we were just at a webinar earlier in the week talking about strategy and tactics within agility. And strategy, it encompasses concepts that are around the long-term objectives that our business are trying to go off and accomplish. A lot of those objectives come from on high, and they say that these are the things that we want to get done within the next 2 to 3, maybe 4 years, or maybe even a longer runway. They're not done overnight. Agile transformations, for people who've been working in this space for a long period of time, I've always considered those objectives to be strategies. And tactics and the versus from a strategy perspective are those more immediate actions that we're taking on a daily basis. It's the methods that I pick up out of my toolkit and decide to go use in order to go accomplish and move towards this strategic blueprint that the organization has created. Now, I know that's a mouthful, and a lot of people, as I said, with most big companies, a lot of these different objectives itself come being thrown over the fence. And there's a definite separation that exists between the strategic arm of the organization and the organization that's actually delivering on a daily basis. That said, there are organizations, and just to use the same picture, there are agile organizations today doing the very same thing when they're trying to go deliver as well, which is they're just throwing the feature over the fence and they're never seeking the feedback from the customers in order to go close the loop itself. Just to say that there is some bad agile that exists out there, and also there's bad strategy as well. Now, in a healthy system, what we see is that there's an amplifying and dampening that takes place between the strategic arm and the tactics that are employed in order to go produce something. Companies all the time are trying to sense opportunities. They're looking out at the future and they're saying that this is where we want to take our product, this is where we want to take our company. And they are constantly interviewing or probing the ecosystem that they're working in order to go figure out what that next big thing is. And that could come from lots of research firms come in and tell you what current market trends are. If you look at right now, the number of AI positions that are opened up on most of the job boards today, there's a lot of companies that think that there are opportunities exist with AI that they want to get involved with. And so that shifts their internal objectives for their company. And that then becomes something that within the next 3 to 5 years or later, that we want to go deliver on. Now in the tactic space, the focus on the, think of the here, one's focused on the there and when and why, and then the other one is focused on the tactics or more here now and how are we going to go do that? And this is where those objectives touch reality. And when reality, we deliver something, I've always considered, and I'm a big complexity theory buff and listening to different people who have different ways of approaching this. But when we deliver something, it's a probe. It's the first time the customer sees it. The customer is then going to give us feedback. And they could do that directly to us, or they can come back through and decide to just go publish it on the internet. And we have to go sensing it out through other means other than a direct customer conversation. To me, strategic agility is those two operations of both the strategic arm and the tactical arm of the organizations, amplifying and dampening objectives. Company objectives are shifting and changing just as much as product features are changing as we do in Agile, meaning that we learn something from the customer that either invalidates an objective or it might actually reinforce that we're on the right direction and we should continue it, or we need to enhance that objective in some regards based upon what we've seen with the actual touching of reality with the customers itself. Likewise, there's also the adaptions as new market trends come. Maybe that's not the right product to deliver at this time. And those could have a dampening function coming back and saying, let's not continue to work on this product anymore. And let's go ahead and shift. Lastly, if you think of it from the business agility, strategic agility, all of the different coined phrases that are out there today, I look at this as that really what we're doing is from when we propose an opportunity in the early days of something that we want to do as an organization, and we do set those objectives, that we're utilizing the power of early iterative delivery in order for us to increase fidelity to the reality that we're trying to accomplish. And I hope that makes sense, because I think in most regards, companies are not iterating their opportunities as effectively as they can. And if your company does, we definitely want to hear how potentially you might have utilized Agile or other methods early on in your processes when you're in those early strategic planning, and how that might have affected the way that you produce your product and adapt your plans within your organization. So the questions to kick this off is, what is your approach to building strategic agility within an organization? How do you approach it? What tools do you pull up? What methods are you using in order to go accomplish this? And what do you see as the biggest obstacle that's out there for you to do it? If you're not doing it, what do you see as the biggest obstacle? If you're doing it partially, what do you see as the biggest obstacle? And so to kick this off, let's see. Shauna, did you want to take a first stab at this? I know there's a lot to unpack.
Sure. Typically, it's usually beginning of the year, all of the strategic plans are due, what we want to go after. It's sent out to the organization. By the time we get the funding and finance goes through it, almost always within the first 2 months after we've quote unquote finalized our strategic plans for the organization, something comes in and we have to change course. And I think the two main things on the way that I see strategic agility is we've now sent all of the teams down this path. They have their goals for the year. They're off and they're running. How do you build? The questions that I always ask are, how do you allow those teams to continue to make progress without kind of stopping everything? And how do you also shift course where you need to? And I think the biggest thing is to align everybody at the different layers, at the strategic level, bringing in all of the executives. I really like doing an offsite where we, or some kind of strategy session where we talk about what's changing, but most importantly, what's stopping. Because we can't take the same amount of people, the same amount of money, and say we want to keep going down this path. We have to actually stop some things. And so once we make those decisions on what the business is deprioritizing, we have to then align all of the other layers. And so first pulling in your leaders or your middle managers and making sure that everybody understands why these decisions were made, what the impact is on the organization, and how we're going to make the changes. And then instead of going out and trying to change everything, really looking at the teams that potentially are impacted. And then if we have to stop what they're doing or allow them some time to wrap up what they're doing, and then do some sort of kickoff or liftoff to onboard them onto the next thing, it's really aligning all of those different pieces of the organization. Typically, where I see that it falls apart is that there's somebody at the top that will make a decision. We need to change directions, but not spending the time on really looking at the impacts. And then subsequently saying, we can't stop anything. We also have to do all this and everything else. And by having that lack of decision-making, it really impairs the organization and it will impact the organization for the rest of the year in terms of trying to deliver, stay motivated, and do all the things that they want to do. So in terms of obstacles, it's really that slowing down before we can speed up and making sure that everybody is aware and there's that transparency all along the way so that the company can be agile at the strategic layer, but also making sure that they're connecting all of the pieces down the line.
So I'm curious, you were talking about the fact that management needs to be aware of how that change is going to potentially impact the people who are currently delivering the thing that we might pivot from. What is the right way to approach that? What process do you use if suddenly you needed to change course? How do you keep morale up?
Again, I think it's really important to be specific on the parts of the organization that it is going to change and giving the being able to indicate why those changes are happening and why it's critical to the business. Engineers often are very interested in, I've talked to some engineers and they're like, I've been working on this for a long time, but I don't really understand the why or how this connects to the bigger picture. And when you explain it in a way that where you're really talking about the company and not the team in particular, it's, oh, this is the first time I actually understand how I fit into the bigger picture. And so that's why I think tying that strategy back down to what they're delivering in a way that's, we need to pivot and here's why, getting the leaders on board, but also giving the team time to tie up loose ends and to complete the work that they're doing, whatever, hopefully that's a shorter time frame, but allowing the team to do that so that really gives them a fresh start to start on something new. I find that often will keep morale up.
Okay. Thank you for that. Let's see. Sheila Eckhart, what do you have on this?
Oh, thanks, Ray. So I have a couple of things. I'm doing consulting now. I see lots of different flavors of this. But one of the things that you had shown two different diagrams, And one was throwing objectives over the fence, and the other was throwing features over the fence. I think when you're throwing the objectives over the fence, you have a much better chance of putting in that strategic agility by implementing some feedback loops from your tactical agility. And I used to do this before I went into consulting. We used to have our annual strategy stuff for what I was working on. But because what I did at that time was very volatile, we always had to review how the things did on a tactical way and switch strategy if necessary. But when you're doing that feature, throwing the features over the fence, and you think your feature is strategy, that's where I feel like now you have to really look at things from another angle, because at that point, I think you've lost sight of agility, because features aren't really a strategy. They're more things that you think you want to accomplish. So from the objective standpoint, I do think that you could take your tactical agility, which is your teams doing what they're being agile and creating the work, and also being able to get their own customer feedback to see where things are, feeding that back to strategy and having a process in place to do these reviews monthly or as data comes in order to see, do you hold the line and continue? Do you pivot? Do you just take a loss on whatever you've invested on something because it's never going to work to the objective that you were hoping for? And all of your tactical agility can feed data for you to know that.
Well, you brought up one point that when you're consulting and when as you go into organizations, how many organizations confuse objectives, strategic objectives, and they're really much more shorter term, more of a tactical goal?
Yeah, I think that there's a big misconception of what is an objective versus a project, so to speak. And I do see a lot of people defining a project and saying this is our objective, and our objective is to put X in place for the customer, which is really the output that you're trying to do. Like, you're trying to achieve this output of creating this new module for your customer. What objective is that to get for the company? And that's where I think a lot of people look at that as their objective versus the actual outcomes that they're looking for.
That's interesting. It's like poorly written user stories without having the back end of that that I can grow my business by X.
Exactly. So that we get this many more customers. Putting that out there, that doesn't get you anything.
Exactly. Thank you for that. Let's see. Scott, you raised your hand. What do you have on this?
Yeah. Good morning. Good afternoon, everyone. So I was just thinking as you outlined a topic and everybody was speaking that I've worked with teams where if you have really well communicated and radiated priorities from the top down, and you also have agile teams that are really connected with the customer, that sometimes some of these pivots aren't just top down driven. Some of them are from the dev teams working with what they think management's looking for, and also getting that feedback from being so closely aligned with the customer, that sometimes the teams are actually pushing that up to management to say, hey, this is what we're seeing. What do you think? We think we might need to pivot here.
That's a great example of what I think a good strategic agility is in an organization, where the developers do have that influence. Do you find in your experience, are you seeing them being successful with trying to influence that strategy?
I've seen it be successful, but I've also worked in plenty of environments where agile teams are not closely aligned with the customer and or are not clear on what the strategic themes are for management and are working off of various lists of priorities, things can get muddy really quick. I've seen both sides of that coin.
Yeah. And if you look at the comparison between the both sides, which ones are more successful?
Obviously, if you can be more customer centric, I just scrum.org put a thing out on LinkedIn yesterday talking about the importance of customer centricity and everything really revolving around the customer. And then I think I like when I see that, but I'm like, also, there's a lot coming from management too. And you know, they really need to be clear and concise and say, look, this is what our priority is. And we're going to radiate that for everyone to see. And we're not going to give you 10 different lists to work off of. Or I think somebody brought up earlier, you know, we're not going to say, here's your themes for the year. And then 2 months into the year, they're like, oh, and you're going to do these 5 themes as well and just overload everybody. I think there's a balance there between what those strategic themes are for management and also being close to that customer. And if you can get that all aligned, we were talking about earlier, then to me, that's a world I want to work in.
Yeah, that, same here. Thank you for that. Sheila McGrath, what do you have on this?
You really need to have this to understand the strategy and review the strategy. And I think a lot of organizations put a strategy in place and don't go back and revisit it. And you really need to look at, I don't care whether you call it a canvas or a roadmap or have another name for it, but I've been in organizations where there was a roadmap for a program where we started out with 10 major projects maybe and wound up with 40 or 50 over time because we looked to see, well, what do we really need to satisfy the customer need and what is really in the scope? And you need to be looking at it in relation to what's needed at the enterprise level. So there might be, like at one point I was in telecom where we were looking at launching new features and functionality and new handsets, but also looking at changes to the network. And what are the things that customers are going to want? And is there a reason to go in a certain direction when you've got a choice of features? And you can get bogged down in the detail. So a good way to look at that is to go back up to the roadmap level. That's the one that I've seen be the most successful, where you're doing basically what you do with Agile, where you're putting the cards up on the wall or post-its or whatever, and they can be virtual, and moving them around and looking to see what's related, what are the priorities? Can I do this before I've done that? But you can't just leave it there. You have to go back and revisit it periodically. It might be every month. It might be when you're doing every quarter. But if you just leave it there. Oh, and the other thing is, I've seen organizations where I don't think they were doing it that well, where they set their strategy for the fiscal year. And at the end of the fiscal year, they looked to see how much they'd achieved, but then they set a whole new strategy for the next year without ever considering where their loose ends that still needed to be tied up from the previous one. Did it relate? And what was it the customer really wanted?
Interesting.
And if you're not responsive to the customer after a while, you probably aren't going to be in business anymore, or that division isn't, or whatever it is. It depends on how the organization is divided, whether it's going to affect the entire organization or not. But I also don't think you can look at, I hear a lot of people talk about it with IT specifically. And if you're not looking at it at the enterprise level, and if it's not, if there's not a relationship between what the divisions are doing and what the organization as a whole is doing, you're going to be marching off in different directions.
I think you bring one interesting point, and I just remember this early days of Agile. We used to keep our user stories in a 3x5 card, purposefully, because we wanted to make sure that it was a small amount of work. But we wrote them on paper because anytime we put it into a digital system online, people just felt that they were not negotiable anymore. Versus I can always flip the card over and take notes. Have you seen that because of the way that the company rolls out its objectives, that potentially it feels like they're not changeable? They're just what they are?
Yeah, I think also things get lost in translation when you put it into a digital format and you roll it up where if you have it where it's all supposed to relate from the lowest level to the top, whether you're going top down or bottom up, things get lost in translation. They get misinterpreted, they fall out of scope. And they may have been the things that were really important that got lost somewhere in the middle. And everybody thinks they're going in this, doing the same thing and that they're all tied in together, but they're not. And I think you have to be able to step back and rearrange things too. That's where the places that I've seen where we did it most successfully that I've been in were the ones where we literally got people in a room. And I don't think it has to be in a room today because we've got better virtual tools. But physically or virtually, be open to the idea of rearranging things as and some of it's the priorities change, the market changes. A lot of things that people were planning to do in 2020 kind of went out the window with the pandemic because the whole world's priorities shifted. But on a smaller scale, that happens with businesses generally when something happens like an interest rate rise or fall. Changes people's spending priorities and changes what people want. And if you're marketing a product that was what people wanted in an old environment, but you haven't revisited your strategy, you can be developing a product that's no longer viable.
Mm-hmm. Now, Karen made a comment that what is the right mix of people to have in the room when you're trying to establish the right balance and priorities? How do you judge that as a facilitator of one of those meetings?
Depends on what your objective is. Are you trying to get something as a straw man to take out to the larger community, or are you trying to get validation from the larger community? Because at a certain point, if you're trying to figure out, is this feasible from a tactical perspective, then you need the people that are going to be involved in the tactical execution. If you then want to get buy-in from the rest of the organization, you need to have a way to get all of the key decision makers involved, either there themselves or by proxy. And that could be, I've seen times where we got everybody in the room and every department had to be represented and had a vote and a say. And it might be hard to find a room that was physically big enough, depending on how large the organization was. And of course, if it's a large organization and it's national or global, you got to figure out time zones when they're all going to be awake and when you can have people in physical or virtual rooms. But if you don't get that buy-in where everybody's got the same understanding of the objectives and knows when something is going to interfere with those objectives and they need to raise some new concern that's come up, it's likely that you're not going to get there.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that was clear or not.
I think it was clear. I think what you're saying is that that there's a lot of organizations that are teams that have skin in the game, and you need to make sure that you're bringing them along for the journey. And as you're shifting and changing those priorities, it's very important to hear what they have to say. Back at my old company, Intel, we used to have something called disagree and commit. The disagreement was something that you could go off and say, I disagree that this is the right objective because of X, Y, and Z. And there might be the case that they might pivot and say that, yeah, we took your input, we heard you, but we still believe it's important to the business. And so therefore the commit part was, you got your say. And then the commitment is that we're going to go execute towards it, which I thought was a pretty cool concept itself. Let's see, Bob.
Just probably a few real quick comments. Regarding objectives and virtually everything, I think you've really got to start with why. And that was brought up one time. The other thing that's foreign to me is not revisiting, reviewing, reinstating the objectives on a regular basis, whether that's quarterly or monthly. I don't think it has to be monthly, but I would think the same team that created the objectives would, again, revisit, review, and reiterate to the organization those objectives on a regular cadence. The other thing, the earlier on brought up point, and the phrase that I use is no one is sitting on their hands. If you give us some new stuff, what are you taking off our plate? I always reiterate that, as well as, and again, this point was brought up. I want to know and understand the cost of changing course or pivoting. So the teams, the organization needs to understand that's the vital, is critical. We're going to shift. We're going to change. We're going to pivot. But let's also account for the cost of putting things on shelf or just shifting direction. And lastly, planning to 100% capacity always bugs me, whether it's people or the budget, when we go into strategic planning and we say, okay, for the whole year, for the next 12 months, we know exactly what we're going to do, exactly where we're going to spend our money, and nothing will change. Planning to 100% of capacity just is doomed for failure.
Fully agree with you on that. One of the things, again, I used to work for a semiconductor company, and they would never run their fab lines at 100% capacity, because they understood what would happen if they ran it at 100% capacity. It would start to break. And so I was always surprised that what we say for machines, which is run them at a lower capacity so that therefore they don't, and we have that slack that's built into the system. Why would we think humans should be ran at 120? It's always shocking to me.
Having worked at Motorola Mobility, I get it.
Yeah, I think you, well, definitely. Again, 30 years at Intel, so I've had my share of my rodeos in that space, definitely. Thank you for your comments, Bob. I really appreciate it. Let's see. Jörg, what do you have on this?
Yeah, probably three thoughts. First one is really to get people aware of the fact that strategy is not just top-down and that there is anything visible in the organization anyway. It's good to look just as what people plan and how they plan on the lower level. Just for example, I had an experience long time in a company where it was just standard that the objectives in the personal discussions were just extremely vague in terms of what was recorded. And there was a lot of concrete example. Reason was, we know something's going to shift. And we know that there's a range of possibilities. And if you went through this, you really saw all the possibilities, even for a long way, that very often materialized or at least got discussed very early on, because you just have so many people that have a thought. If you just in a sense of sense making, map this and see where do I have people preparing for something, then probably they are sensing in a way either what technology is doing or what the market is doing, which you definitely need to take as input for your strategy, because so many people might be just a bit smarter. And same thing is going for your customer. Sometimes you want to give them something they are not aware of they need. So you need to observe them. Working in automotive, I've seen them ask people really to be on site. From your company as a supplier, you have to be on site working with their teams. And these people, actually, few people really wanted to do this because it was hard work. You were disconnected from your own team. But they were very valued for the strategy because they had that close touch of not talking to the top managers, not talking to the purchasing departments, but observing what actually was done on the shop floor, more or less, or in the development teams. And they could say, this is actually what the people are thinking about. And that is an opportunity to use that, which is just devoid of whether you're using technical agility or not. You can actually start with strategy if you look at those things and be aware. And last but not least, the third thought, where you link the objectives to features. I'm a bit wondering what would be the architecture of the strategy. This is probably the setup of the organization, the way communication is happening. And there it's really helpful to stimulate the emergence and not try to dictate too many things and really adapt. One example I like is if you put a new housing setup or campus in place, it's now becoming at least an option not to do the walkways in the beginning, but leave it just grass for a year. And then you will see where people move through and trot, and you get much more effective routes into that setup than you could plan before. So sometimes really on especially far away things, let a bit of emergence happen and not try to be the smartest guy in the room as the top manager and try to define all the walkways that people then will probably ignore to a part anyway.
I think that's a great point. I can think of when we were setting up early agile teams, we decided to get desks that had wheels on it and whiteboards with wheels. And we didn't dictate how we wanted people to set up their work area. We let them set up their work area. And it was amazing to see what patterns emerged from that. And same thing with products. I think that's in the same space, which is there's a set of versatility that could go into there that organically the needs of the customers are going to flow through there. And I think taking that back to the objectives, a new market opportunity might come into existence that we never even dreamed of. And we need to be, you know, aware and awake for that when it does take place. Deanna, you actually posted a second ago when we were talking a little bit about throughout the beyond budgeting words on the chat. Beyond budgeting, what the heck is that?
Beyond budgeting is a kind of parallel movement to Agile that's going on in the finance world. Started in Europe and Norway, actually. And Bjarte Bogsnes is the person to look for if you want to read more about it. Follow him on LinkedIn or check out his stuff. But the idea being that budgeting for an annual cycle makes no sense in today's world. And it is all about what are some new ways of thinking about that kind of planning that give organizations more strategic agility to be able to turn their attention quickly as needed and be able to fund new opportunities that may not meet the annual budgeting cycle or decide to give more emphasis in one place than they were planning to do in less than another and that sort of thing. So it's a whole thing, and it's worthwhile for people to check it out. But it's very parallel to the Agile. It's a similar kind of thinking in different ways about something that has been traditionally quite stuck in one way of doing things in an organization. The other thing that I was thinking about here is the shiny object problem that we sometimes talk about. And it has to do with back in the very beginning, you talked about AI. And I would never see IE as a strategy, or AI, I'm sorry, AI as a strategy. Strategy for me is identifying the challenges that we want to address. What kind of impact do we want to make in our environment, whether it's a marketplace environment or whatever it might be? And then building I think Sheila was talking about some initiatives around that. And one initiative might be, let's see what AI has to offer us. But the why absolutely has to be there. Why are we even in business? And that's going to change. And I loved what Bob said, because I had a note about that too, about choosing the cadence that you're going to review and refresh and bring people up to speed on what's different, which would be a very consistent with a beyond budgeting approach. And so pot of money, here's where we're going to initially spend it, but if we get some new information, we can also move it over here or over there. And so we suffer a lot from that, particularly in technical organizations, from the new shiny object thing. And it can be so distracting to really achieving a strategy. And then that trickles down to tactical agility, because the people at the tactical level end up getting just whipsawed here and there by whatever the next shiny object is, and not really ever getting that good sense of following through and achieving a thing. Yeah.
No, one thing to bring up is that certain companies have policies or just behaviors around budgeting that are really counter to establishing a more agile organization, because I can tell you that I've had cases where if I gave away part of my budget on something that I think was a better objective for my teams to go off and work on, either if they take people over there or take dollars, we get into the strategic planning for the next year and they go, you didn't really need that 25% that you just made an investment into another team. Therefore, we're taking it away from you. And what I've seen is, at least with the way that the business processes get set up in certain companies, is it drives the behavior of hoarding. People will hoard resources. And I think, and I was lying when I said, what's this about beyond budgeting? I've read it. It's a good book to go off and read. But I can tell you that alone, just that one aspect of ending hoarding within organizations is so appealing to go through that when you're going through the annual budgeting cycle.
Yeah. And Vicky asked the question here. So beyond budgeting is the topic. And the author is Bjarte, B-J-A-R-T-E, Bogsness, B-O-G-S-N-E-S. So,
thank you for doing that. And he's a frequent speaker at a lot of events, mostly in Europe. But if you ever get a chance to see some of his videos online, I think it really is helpful to hear it from the author's mouth and why the foundation of what he created was there. Let's see. We got a couple more hands up and we're getting close to the top of the hour. So let's see. Joanne.
I think it's Joan.
Joan, I am so sorry. So again, dyslexia.
No worries.
What do you have?
I don't know if folks on the call have heard of ADCAR. And basically getting people through an agile transformation, or even when you're moving from strategic to tactical, using the ADCAR model, which is basically where you're getting concurrence from everybody. And granted, you can't take the time every time you pivot to use it. But the idea is ADCAR stands for awareness, desire, knowledge, ability, reinforcement. So talking about the change, so awareness of the need for the change, desire to participate and support, knowledge on how to change, implement is the ability and to sustain. So a lot of what I've seen here in our organization is we are part agile, and some of it's potentially because people are not seeing the advantages of some of the aspects of agile. So they don't necessarily have the desire. But I also blame some of their lack of desire on the change management when it was happening. The knowledge, there was not a sufficient rollout of. We just recently cut over. We used to do release planning. And then we went to what was called continuous planning for all of our projects, which was somewhat of a free-for-all, because everybody was like, we're going into a pipeline and we want to do DevSecOps. And it was really, everything was being approved and capacity planning and everything else wasn't being looked at. So now we're back to doing what guide planning, which is one of the keys in Agile, which is, yeah, you have to be ready to pivot, but you also have to have an idea for a certain amount of time. For us, the PI is, the increments are like 10 weeks, but you have to have an idea of what you have the capacity for. And I 100% agree with the gentleman that said, never should you plan to 100% capacity. So they were just the couple pieces of information that I wanted to share.
No, those are really good things for us to go look up. I think one of the things, when you mentioned that this framework has one of its centers is knowledge, I think a lot of times when we're pivoting off of something, we don't give enough respect to the knowledge that we learned during it and being able to look at that. And if you think about an organization and its growth and its ability to be healthy, is how it absorbs knowledge and puts that into, you know, the wisdom of the organization. And I think that's something that really needs to be looked at more for most organizations. We are right now at the top of the hour. I would like to thank everyone for your comments. It looks like everyone really was excited about the subject. If you guys are looking to dig in more to this, we advise you to come over and just come to the Strategic Agility Lab in Portland. This isn't really, it's not trying to be a big for-profit event. Again, it's we want to get together with other like-minded leaders and really just, and I said the word geek out before, but geek out on this subject and dig into it deeper. Be sure to reach out to strategicagilitylab.org, and then that will get you to the website for the registration for that. Other than that, our next live event is going to be on October 27th. Now, this is interesting because we're getting to the end of the year. What this means is we have October and November, and we take December off. Really, we have two more live events that are coming up. We might do something in December that we can get together and create a podcast of some sort in that time frame. But just to note that if you're planning for opening up, if you're depending on however you celebrate the holidays, if you plan on thinking that, oh, is there going to be a nice ACN podcast that's going to be delivered to me at the end of the year? More than likely, no. But we will get back in 1st of January and continue the discussions and continue the conversations that we have. I want to thank all of my co-hosts for being here. You guys are all absolutely awesome. And thank you for all of the great conversations. And I hope you all have a great month. The ACN podcast is for educational and informative use only. If you'd like to know more about the ACN community, please come up to acnpodcast.org and support our show.